to Smart Women Publish, the podcast collection featuring self-published authors and other experts who support them during and after the publishing process. I'm your host, Bev Ryan, author of the book Smart Women Publish. I provide book coaching and publishing services to smart women who want to self-publish non-fiction books in their business or career in order to grow their impact. Today I'm speaking with Sally Thibault, who is a leading authority in helping women reclaim their body and their life. She now lives on the Gold Coast in Australia and has spent over three decades working in the field of health, wellness, counselling, personal development and coaching. As the author of two books, with another one to be launched later this year, Sally definitely is a smart woman who publishes. So welcome, Sally, to episode two of Smart Women Publish. So my first question then is, can you tell me about a book that has had a profound impact on you?
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having me, Bev. I'm really honoured to be here. Actually, it's probably the book I'm reading right now, actually, which is Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza. I'm a great fan of his work. I use his meditations all the time, every day, sometimes twice a day. And this book is really making me kind of get to the point where, you know, you realise that we can be ageless. We can do whatever we want, and just depends on how you view yourself and what your own self-imposed limitations are. So that book probably is my favorite at the moment. I have a great audio book listen to. I love audio books because I listen to them when I work out. I listen to them in the car. And Malcolm Gladwell's the next one on my list to read. So, or to listen to. So, I just love that concept of being absolutely able to have that books at your fingertips without actually having a book in your hand.
So it sounds like the book that you're reading at the moment is helping you dig deeper into the area that you love.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what I think if, as a writer, I think it's really important that you read other people's work. And that can be, you know, I love picking up, you know, if I go to an event, somebody's got a book, I always like to buy their books. I like to see what they've written. And I always believe that you can gain something from somebody else's book, a little bit of insight that perhaps you haven't thought of before. So I love reading other people, whether they're self-published or whether they're traditionally published. I think there's no line in the sand anymore. It just merges from one to the other.
Definitely. So have you ever found as a writer, which we'll talk more about, that you've read other people's books and done the comparison thing and thought, oh my God, you know, who am I to have a voice in this space? Because look at what they've done.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that huge imposter syndrome that takes over, you know, like, who do I think I am? And in fact, my very first book was like that because, who did I think I was? I wasn't an expert. I was just a parent. The book I wrote was about our journey following our son's diagnosis of autism. And I look back on that book now, and even in the writing, it took me 2 years to write that book. And it was about, who do I think I am? You know, and at any given point in time, you write, the minute you write something and it's on paper, it's like, what if it changes? You know, what if things kind of blow up? Because it was very much an autobiographical biography of our family. So, it's very much like that. You know, who do I think I am? What do I think that I can bring that nobody else has? But I've come to learn that we all have different views, and our experiences are what bring our books to life.
Mm. So that book is David's Gift.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that I love that title because it says so much. So how old is David now?
He's 35 now. So, and he's now married and lives in Montreal and got a great job. But, and the book actually came about, I was on my long service leave at my job. So this is about 2008, going back to 2008. And somebody had said to me, because David, by this stage, we've been through a lot, and it was a dinner party one night, and friends about, you know, and as you do after the second or third bottle of red wine, telling a story, and a friend of mine who was sitting next to me said, why don't you write a book about it? And I went, no one would want to read. Why would anybody want to read this book? Mm-hmm. There's other kids and people and families who have gone through far worse than we have. There's other families who have got a bigger, grander story. But because I had my long service leave, from my job, it gave me an opportunity to spend some time. But as it took 2 years to write, and I actually, the first draft of it was all about, this is how you do it. was all This Is How You Know. It was very much very dry, very kind of factual, and I hated it. You know, I read it and just hated it. And one day I was looking for something. I was looking for some dates about something, and I went to the garage to pull out some documentation about, I think it was an IEP that we'd done for David, which is an individual education profile, and somebody had asked me the question about it. And I came across all my old journals that I'd actually written just before and then all for the years following David's diagnosis. And as I read the journals, I recognized that that was the story, and that's what happened.
Nice.
So I managed to change the book from a very dry how-to to our story. And so many people who have read the book have said exactly the same thing to me. It is like you are living my life. It's like you're sitting in my living room. And I think that to me is the power of writing. When you tell your story and you're open about it, no matter what it is, other people can relate. And that's the biggest thing I think I learned from writing David's was the story. Tell the story.
Definitely. Yep. And that's the connection. So I am sure the answer is yes. So do you feel that book had a profound impact on others?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that book, I say, we released that book in 2010. And I didn't realise, you know, serendipity and the universe and stepped in. We happened to release it in the April for no other reason than that's how long it took together to get to come together. Now, I didn't realise that April was Autism Awareness Month. I had no idea. I don't know why I didn't, but I didn't have any idea. I had hired a PR girl at the time, and we managed to get on the Today Show. We was interviewed by Lisa Wilkinson. Then I went on to The Circle when that was on Channel 10. And then from there, a whole heap of radio interviews. And so the book really gained some traction. And that was, as I said, the key response from people responding was, this is like you're telling my story. Mm. I've not told anybody that this is what I'm going through. And you've given me permission to be angry, to be sad, to be upset, to seek help. So, and it was, the book was, I told a story on the book when life got really difficult and I ended up of a lake one day. And it was really difficult to write that part. Mm. In fact, I gave the manuscript to David before I released it. And I said, look, you read it, because it's about you, and you tell me if it's something that's okay, that you're okay for me to publish. He apparently sat up all night and read it, and then the next morning came and said, Mum, there's just one part of the book I need to talk to you about, but he had to go to uni and off he went. Anyway, came home that night, he said, you know that part that night about the lake, Mum? I said, yes. He said, was that my fault? Oh. And I just went, no, darling, that was mine. Okay, he said, you need to... publish it, Mum, because there's lots of other people that need to hear that story. Since that, you know, it was difficult to write, but since that, so many mothers, so many have come to me and said, I've been there. Mm. I've been there. Mm. So I think that's the power of honest storytelling. Mm. We think we're alone. We think we're the only ones that go through it, but we're not. Mm. And if you have the ability to write your story, with good editing, by the way, with good editing, because sometimes, you know, the best books are the ones that have good editors behind them. It can have a profound impact on others.
Mm. Mm. And most of the time you'll have no idea what that impact or who it's impacted, but just trust. You have to trust that it's...
Absolutely. It's going, I mean, to happen. I released that book in 2010. I have a client right now, so it's 2019, who read the book and she's come to work with me now.
Yeah.
So that's 9 years down the track that book is still gaining traction and still helping others. And who would have thought? But that's the quality of a good book.
Definitely. So did you find that book was partly involved in a change in your career?
Very much so.
Okay, so tell me about that.
So at the time I wrote the book, I was actually working in a school. I was the director of community relations for a private school here on the Gold Coast. Loved my job. Loved, loved, loved. I was there for 10 years. And I'd always said to my boss, the headmaster, the day that I don't want to be here anymore, the day I sort of drive here and go, oh, I don't want to be here, is the day I'm going to resign. And I did that. I drove to work one. And as it turned out, I'd had a health issue. It was a highly stressful job. I had a very toxic person in the environment, which really was the best thing that ever happened to me. I think I'd still be there if it wasn't for her. So it was great. But it all coincided with the book. And I left on the 31st of March, and on the 20th of April, I was on the Today Show. And that doesn't happen with all books. It just so happened it was, as I said, serendipitous. But it gave me the impetus to leave my work. I'd kind of, you know, been writing the book and I'd already had the vision of changing careers. What I didn't realise at the time, that I do realise now, that a book is not a career. It is a door opener.
Yes.
It is an expertise awareness platform that gives you, I guess, the credibility to do other things. Mm-hmm. And since that book, I've gone on to do so many other things in my life. But that was definitely the one where I realized and learned a lot about being an author and creating a platform. I learned a lot from that book. Yeah.
Yeah, I love to think of books as being pivotal. If they're done well, by well, I just mean that they've been done with heart and they have a message and they'll connect with the right people that need, you know, they want to hear what you've been through. So it can be quite a pivotal tool for people's business or profession.
Oh, absolutely.
So your second book, which I'm proud to say I had a little hand in, because we did the editing.
Hand in, yes.
So that's Tapping to Reclaim You. So tell me about the transition to that point in your career, and is that where you're still at? And what that book's done for you?
Well, what happened was I'd always said to David, whenever you want me to stop working in the field of autism, because he was kind of drawn into it all the time. People wanted to know about him. He was often asked to be on interviews with me and podcasts and various things. And he came to me one day and it was about his, I think, second or third year of uni. And he said, "Mum, can you not do this anymore?" He said, I think it's great and you're helping everybody else, but I don't want to be tied to this anymore. And I took a deep breath and thought, well, I'd said that all along. Whenever you say, I don't want to be a part of this anymore. And he was wanting to find his own life, as you do, you know, he was 21 or 22 at that stage. And he really needed to be separate from his mum, not continually tied into it. So, and as things always happen, again, serendipitous, everything I do is serendipitous and coincidental. I was involved with a business group in the US. Viewers know a woman called Mari Smith. She's considered the queen of Facebook. And she was actually running a business program at the time. And I met a whole heap of girls, went to San Diego for a week. I met a fabulous group of women from all over the world. And we formed an accountability group. And we used to talk every Monday or every Tuesday morning. And a friend of mine there, Sue, was an EFT practitioner. She was studying to teach EFT. For those that don't know what that is, it's called Emotional Freedom Techniques, or tapping, which is a blend of acupressure and acupuncture and cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's really gaining traction. Anyway, she was an EFT practitioner, and we were going through some really sort of difficult financial trouble, you know, funny that, but you know, that's what happens with the book. you can't base your whole life on the fact that book sales are going to give you an income. Anyway, we were struggling. I've been putting out calls for speaking on stage and nothing was coming through. She kept telling me about this thing called tapping, and I didn't want to have a bar of it when I first saw it. I thought it was just stupid, you know, people tapping on their faces and saying these words and how could it change your life. And because we'd been through autism, I'd been, you know, a lot of people had come to us with crazy concepts and ideas and therapies. And I thought, I'm not doing anything unless it's evidence-based. I want to see proof. So this was that. Anyway, she started talking about the evidence. Anyway, so she got my husband and I on a call one day. I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And I tried it and I was really amazed at how it just shifted everything. All of a sudden things started to flow with us, even after just one session with Sue. And as it turns out, there was a woman coming up to the Gold Coast, onto Brisbane, who was one of the only trainers in the world. And that was literally a month or so later. So I did the course with her, absolutely fell in love with it, as I do with everything, just jumped in, boots and all. And then recognized that whenever I was speaking with it, people kept asking me for scripts and stories. So that's how that book came about. And I literally, that book was actually, I wrote in 30 days. I knew what I was doing then. You know, I knew, I had a framework of a book. It was actually 30 tapping scripts, and then I had sort of stories that I interwove with that. And it was really, as I mentioned to people, it was really a book to have by side of your bed. Whenever you're feeling something overwhelming, fear or anxiety or stress, it's the type of book you pick up and read. And so that book then kind of catapulted me a little more into the whole EFT area, and then I began kind of life coaching, more so using EFT. And that book again gave me opportunities to speak on stage in many conferences, and you know, that's really what the book was all about, was to have a something for sale at the end, and get people onto my website, and then perhaps from there is coming on as clients. And it's been fabulous for that, because it's not one of those books that's like David's Gift was more a story book with a story. Tapping to Reclaim You was more of a how-to book. Mm-hmm. And so it was a different, but again, that book, and I think that's the thing for everything in writing your own book, it opens so many doors.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And from there, interestingly enough, I ended up getting some radio work. I had hired a PA at that, or another PR person. And I now, as of today, even on this call today, I've got 6 radio interviews today that have been ongoing from that. What happens, I've created relationships with different radio hosts, and I'm now the life coach on over 20 radio stations across Australia, and we do, I've been doing that now for, gosh, almost 2 years. So that was something that came out of that book, when it was, and because I developed the relationships, I'm still talking to all those same radio people, and they're calling me all the time.
That's awesome. So I think that's the key with a book that becomes more than just a book. You've got to build a structure around that, and you might write the book and have no idea what that's going to end up being. Yeah. So you probably didn't intentionally set out to do that. I mean, you would have been aware that that's a potential, the potential is there. But I love the word, the fact that you keep coming back to relationships, and it's always going to be that, isn't it?
It is. You've got to build those relationships. And the thing about a book is, the writing is the easy part.
Yes.
So everything else that comes after the writing. Mm. I know myself, when I first wrote David's Gift, I had sort of vision in my mind that once I ended up on the Today Show and ended up on The Circle and ended up on ABC all over Australia and some international calls, that was it. That was going to catapult. That, well, it doesn't. Of course, it doesn't work like that. Mm. You still have to sell ongoing, market your book ongoing, finding the opportunities. And I think that's the key to it, is that your book literally is your brand. It's who you are, and have a platform sitting underneath it, as strong, which we didn't do for David's Gift. We learned so much in David's Gift. Like when I was on the Today Show, I came off the Today Show, but within 30 minutes we had like 150 book orders, and they kept coming in, and we had no system set up, we had no platform. You know, it was just the whole family was sort of jumping in, we had no systems, we had no platform, nothing for collecting emails. And that was a real lesson in not understanding the business of the book. I think that's what's really important too.
Yeah. The book has to be part of a bigger ecosystem, for sure. Excellent. So I see on your website you're currently writing your third book. So what would you like to tell us about that?
Yeah, the third book is actually called Lighter. And my background originally, going back to, 1980s, if you think leg warmers and headbands, I was a fitness instructor, and I was actually a fitness instructor in Canada. I had my own TV show in Canada. The first Canadian TV fitness show was on cable, and it was like Jane Fonda was on one TV station and I was on the other station. We know how that worked out. But anyway, so that's always been my passion. And during that time, I was in the fitness industry for about 15 years. I recognized back then that the way that they were teaching about fitness and wellness and health and diet was wrong. I used to see people coming into the gym all the time. You know, we'd see them, we'd grab them for like 8 weeks and we wouldn't see them again. And so I created a program myself called Intuitive Eating. And interestingly enough, that was actually my first foray into writing a book. I wrote a book about, it was called The Art of Intuitive Eating, and sent it off to Simon & Schuster, the real big publishing company. Mm-hmm. And I still have the rejection letter. That very first one said, We really love the book. We think you're way too ahead of your time, and it's kind of missing something, which I look back and now read it. Yeah, good writing. But it was just terrible, terrible. You know, what I knew, if, now I know, I wouldn't have stopped at one rejection. I wouldn't have done that. I would have kept on going. But in those days, I didn't understand. And I had a lot of self-worth issues, of course. So anyway, now catapult now to 2018 last year. And I thought another thing about diet and another thing about losing weight. And I thought, oh, this is just ridiculous. This is so wrong. We're teaching the wrong thing. So I sat down and created a manuscript, and it's called Lighter, and we're sort of still fiddling around with the byline, but it's about how to look, feel, and be amazing. And it's a little about intuitive eating, but it's a lot about living, and it works on kind of four aspects, what I call sustenance rather than diet. I think diet's the worst four-letter word we've got in the dictionary. Sustenance, so nourishing your body, and spirit, the spirit of you, and strength, physical and emotional strength, and then success. And so it's all combining for the two. And I work on this process of individual, intuitive, intentional, and informed eating. So very much about listening to your body. And you know, I'm now in my 60s. And so for me now, it's all about longevity and what we're doing now that's going to catapult us into the, you know, we're going to live to 100. I read a book last year called The 100-Year Life. And we are all going to live to 100 if we're well enough. So what does that look like? What does that look like for us who's sort of now in our 60s? You know, I'm the tail end of the baby boomers. My husband's the front end. And we talk all the time. You know, we want to have we've got another, you know, me, 40 years, really. We 30 or 40 years. So what's that going to look like? So that's what the book is all about, really. It's about, you know, how do you do the inner work now to live a wonderful, glorious life? And the manuscript is finished. And I'm still now, before we move forward, I'm putting together the platform.
Nice.
Beginning the social media stuff, because it's a bit of a twist away from Tapping to Reclaim You. So now I'm looking at the marketing ahead of it. So I'm building my brand, changing the brand. So by the time the book's released, the platform will be ready. So all these things that I've learned along the way.
So you do some wonderful work. You know, you're highly visible, and I love the to see you pop up on Facebook. Is Facebook one of your main platforms?
Yeah, I've actually just switched. I switched actually about 4 months ago to doing Instagram TV. So I did Facebook Lives for about 18 months. It was every Saturday morning, which I loved. It was fantastic, great platform. And of course, it got me, you know, when you do videos all the time, it gets you very succinct in your message. You learn very quickly how to hold it. Hold the audience's attention. But after I wanted my Saturdays back. It was every Saturday morning, and I love getting down. We live very close to the beach. I love, you know, doing a big workout on Saturday morning. I love kind of, you know, spending Saturday, you know, with a bit of a long breakfast, all that stuff. And I thought, I'm kind of ready for this to switch. And the other thing was, I was noticing that people now are watching shorter things. They want short, sharp bites. So now I do an IG Instagram TV probably 3 or 4 times a week. They're about 3 to 5 minutes long. So they're very succinct, which makes me think. You know, I'm constantly planning what I'm going to talk about. But then I can also post that on Facebook. So it still goes to Facebook. But I'm just really enjoying the Instagram platform a lot more. I find I don't go down the rabbit hole as much. You know, on Facebook, I'm on the rabbit hole. Go down the rabbit hole. But Instagram, I think it's a very powerful platform. I think it's going to build. I'm already seeing changes. Like Facebook now, you can actually post your Instagram now on Creator Studio on Facebook. So part of being a great author, I think, is also being aware of changes. You've got to get your message out. Mm-hmm. How are you going to do that?
Yeah, know where people are. So in terms of doing that, do much of that yourself, or do you have someone who assists you with that sort of
thing? I do all the filming myself, but I have a VA, and she does the posting for me. So all my radio interviews and the IGTV, she picks those up, and then she reposts them on my website, on LinkedIn, on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So I'm on all those platforms. Yes. I made a decision a couple of years ago, and Twitter. Months ago, only focus on two platforms at a time. So right now it's Facebook and Instagram, but I am looking more at LinkedIn, watching LinkedIn at the moment. I think that's the thing, I think, is as writers and authors, we have to be multitaskers. We, you know, your message, once you've, you know, the blood, sweat and tears to write this book and put your heart and soul on paper, people need the message. That's what you've been called. I think we've all been called to write books. And more and more people are using the platform. I think years ago, you remember when Amazon first came out, they were saying, oh, it's the end of books. It's the end. No, it isn't. It's actually, in fact, more so.
It's more so.
And I think more independent publishers are now being picked up by traditional publishers. But you've got, it's the platform you've got to build.
Yes. Because even if you do go to a traditional publisher, that they still expect you to do that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, that was, I'll never forget the day I decided to self-publish David's Gift, because everyone had said to me, oh, you should send it to the publishers, you know, such a great book. And I'll never forget this day. It was a bookstore, it's no longer there, of course, at one of our local shopping centres. And 6 months before, I don't know, people may or may not remember Yana Vent, but Yana Vent was the current affairs reporter. She was so visible and everybody loved Yana Vent. She was kind of, she was the Lee Sales of that generation, where she was really hard hitting in her interviews. But she, 6 months before, she'd launched her book. And I remember, because watching the big launches, TV wide launches, you know, she was going to book sales. 6 months later, I walked past a bargain bin at this bookshop and it was there for $5. And I remember thinking, I never want one of my books to be like that. I never, and because that, when you go to a traditional publisher, while you might get the distribution, you're answerable to them. They make the decision about where your book goes, what it's called, how much money you're going to get from it. I mean, they're in charge. And while I was involved in a conversation just recently about, you know, is it better for an author to go with a traditional publisher or an independent publisher, self-publishing? And in my experience, nobody cares.
No.
People don't ask. You're still visible. You know, I've just noticed, you know, Marie Folio has just launched, you know, her book, Everything is Figureoutable, has just hit the New York Times bestseller. But she's got an enormous platform.
Yes.
You know, so that's what the publishers, traditional publishers, are still looking for. They want the big platform. You've got to do the work. You may as well do it yourself.
Definitely.
Make more money.
My recommendation to anybody is, if you're going to write a book, particularly a non-fiction book, it's don't expect the book sales to be the business. It's not the business. It's maybe part of your business, but it's a bigger thing.
Yeah.
So just one last question. You do a lot of personal development. You invest in a lot of personal growth, personal development. So that's, I think we've touched on that earlier, reading, going to, going overseas to conventions, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So do you feel that's really been an essential part of your growth?
Oh, absolutely. And now I'm involved in a big organisation where they really encourage you to write books and to be around others who are writing books. I've got two more. So this one, Light, is coming out. I'm already planning another one in 2 years, and then 2 years from now, based on my own life.
Nice.
I'm going to write one when I'm 65. What it feels like to be 65 and get your seniors card.
Just getting then, started.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then one after that is when my husband and I celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. So, you know, I might write one about relationships at that point.
Nice.
But, I mean, to me, you know, self-development, because the thing about writing a book, there's so many things you have to overcome. The imposter syndrome is number one. Who do I think I am? Your value and your own worth. The minute you put those words down on paper, that's it. They're there. It's not like, you know, you can rewrite the thing. In fact, my very first book, David's Gift, I'll never forget it. A friend of mine once said to me, he used to work for Australian Consolidated Press, so he did all the work on Women's Weekly. He said, we were yet to put out a clean magazine. You will always find an error in it.
That's reassuring, actually.
It is. And that's exactly what happened with David's Gift. Exactly. So, you know, back in the days before we had drop shipping and everything we do now, you have to get a big pop, you know, like there were, I think we ordered 2,000 books arrived at the, you know, in my living room. I was terrified to read it. Terrified. I wouldn't open the box for about 2 days. Sure enough, page 26, to the right next to each other. And I went, oh, you've got to be kidding. I could sit literally open up and there it was.
It's the law of publishing.
And I remember Jack Canfield saying that. He said something like that. You will always find an error in your first one. So don't you know, get really hung up on it. It happens all the time. And it's so funny now, because when I'm reading somebody else's book and I see an error, I go, oh, I get it.
Yes.
I so get it.
Definitely. There's something I heard this years ago. I love it. It's Muffery's Law. Instead of Murphy's Law, it's Muffery's Law of publishing. There'll always be an error.
It's so true. And you've got to get over that. You know, like I'm a recovering perfectionist. And so I was just, I was mortified. No, you know, I didn't want the book to go out. And I couldn't wait for the second. Mm-hmm. We sold enough to have a second print run. But
yes.
It was just, you know, when I was in back. And the message, it's still the message, you know, and that was, I think that's the most important. So the self-development, imposter syndrome, your value and your worth. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I just went and saw the movie Ride Like a Girl, mm-hmm. on the weekend with Michelle Payton. What a fantastic movie. But there was a real message that came out of that. And that was, you know, you just have to put the hours in. You have to believe in yourself when no one else does. And I think, you know, so many books have been written where people that just languished in, you know, and nobody wanted them. Harry Potter is a classic example. Chicken Soup for the Soul is another example. And I remember with Jack Campbell, I think they were rejected 144 yes. times. And I often think to myself, well, I haven't reached 144 yet, so I'm not giving up.
And it's true with Chicken Soup for the Soul. Like, didn't they just load up their vehicle and just travel yeah. around? Did yeah. local radio interviews, sold the book out of the car.
That's you got exactly to do the work. Yeah. You've got to do the work. I ended up landing a gig. There was a year I went to Mari Smith's event in San Diego, and a wonderful thing in the States is they've got all these really tiny little television studios mm-hmm. everywhere. And I managed to get on one of the San Diego TV for an interview. Now, as somebody said, about 400 people would have watched that in San Diego, but I grabbed that. So the photo of me with the book, with the presenter in front of the San Diego TV, ran on my Facebook page for a long time. And I was actually at an event many years later, and somebody said, you've seen, you just come back from San Diego where you were interviewed. You know, that's the credibility. And yes. I think that's what's really important when, you know, you've got to look at, you know, getting your book photos with people, you know, continue to promote the book. It doesn't stop because your book's published. Mm-hmm. As I said earlier on, the hard work begins mm-hmm. after.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. And you got to believe, and that's where the inner work comes from. Mm.
For sure. And you mentioned audiobooks. So have you yes. turned any of your books into audiobooks?
No, but I will be. The Tapping to Reclaim You, I got asked for it all the time. And the new one, I'm going to be doing an audiobook. The platform's a lot bigger now. Tapping to Reclaim You, that was like 4 years ago. I can't remember how long ago. Maybe 3 years ago. Wasn't as big, yeah, wasn't as big a platform back then. Mm. Now it is. And so that will be coming out in audiobook, but so will David's Gift. They're all, that's nice. my goals for 2020. Yes. All the books will come out in an audio, because, you know, you've got to go into a studio and it takes a long time and, you know, you've got to find the funds to do all that.
Yes.
So it's like the chicken and the egg thing all the time. But yes, as I said, I'm a great audiobook listener and, And I recognise, but you're really missing out in the market if you're not on doing audiobook, because so many people now want to multitask. It's you know, and for my age group, the people, sort of women over 50, and what I'm finding is they'll say, by the end of the night, my eyes are tired. Mm-hmm. I've been in front of the computer all day, or, you know, I want to be able to, and I'm tired, or even when I want to read, I'll fall asleep. I thought, okay, that's interesting, because I'm a bit the same too. You know, by the time I get to the end of the day, my eyes are tired.
Yes.
Not reading. So, yes, definitely audiobook.
Awesome. Well, there's plenty of ways to do that. So, that's okay, well, I think that's been an awesome conversation. I think we could just keep talking for ages, but I'm just really aware that in terms of listening, you know, people like shorter podcasts, shorter listening bites. So. Yes. Look, I just have to say thank you so much for coming on today. I'm sure there'll be lots of reasons why we can talk again perhaps when your next book comes out. So that would be awesome.
Thank you for having me. It's just been such an honour, and lovely talking about books, isn't it?
Yes,
wonderful?
Yes, it is. Fabulous thing. Thanks Sally. Bye. So listeners, you can find Sally Thiebaud at this website address, sallythiebaud.com.au. And I'll spell that out because her surname is a little unusual. Sally, thibault.com.au. And you can find me, Bev Ryan, and my book, Smart Women Publish, at smartwomenpublish.com. Thanks again.